So hopefully everyone's feeling healthy and doing well and that your day up until this point was meaningful. I do think it's a nice opportunity to spend some time learning Torah together before the fast concludes and to dedicate some time. What's interesting is that I was thinking about the difference between Shivas Arba Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and on the fact that honestly on Tisha B'Av in 3 weeks from now, we actually wouldn't be able to have a shiur like this, in that it's one of the restrictions to learn Torah unrelated to the day itself. And so I think in many ways on the fast day that comes right before that, it is a tremendous opportunity to spend some time learning Torah together. And yashar koach to all of you who I'm sure are tired a little. It's the longest fast. We were just talking about that. We have been in camp or in Israel every year up until this year. And I think it's we're either on camp time, which means it's an hour shorter, or Israel is normally less. So for everyone who is in America on the East Coast, this is one of the longer ones, so yashkalach. Okay, we are going to start this week's parsha, is Parsha Pinchas. I'm actually going to cheat a little bit. I know we said 6 for 6, but I'm going to do four, and my husband, I think, was still planning on doing 3, so it may end up being 7 for 7, and it's not going to be Peirushin, because I think the one of the Midrashim that we're going to learn together is probably one of the more powerful ones to think about, and in general, Parsha Pinchas, as usual, all of the Parshiyot and Sefer Midbar are really this way, has so many different topics, so many different inyanim. Of course, beginning with Pinchas himself, a continuation of last week's Parsha, the end of Parsha Balak. But we're going to focus specifically on two different areas. One of them being the Benot Tzlachat. I think when we have the opportunity to learn about women who come up in Parshat Shavua, it is definitely a nice opportunity to do that specifically as women. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the connection between Yoshua being appointed as the next leader. That officially happens in this week's Parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu does smicha, and when we say smicha, he physically takes his hands and puts them on Yoshua, kind of making him the next leader, and talking about the Karban Tamid. So we're going to start off with the Benot Tzlachat. We're told in Bamidbar Parachav Zayin, V'tikravna Benot Tzlachat, this is Pasuk Aleph, V'tikravna Benot Tzlachat ben Chifer ben Gila ben Machir ben Benashe, L'mish Pachot Menashe ben Yosef, V'ilish Mo Benotav, Machla Noah V'chagla U'milka V'tirza. The daughters of Tzlachat, and we actually have his entire lineage. He's the son of Chifer, the son of Gila, the son of Machir, the son of Menashe, and they are part of the family of Menashe, who is Menashe ben Yosef, meaning that they come from Sheva Menashe. Their names are Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, Batirza. It happens to be our daughter Abigail, some of you might know this, was born on Yom Ha'atzma'ut a year and a half ago, probably less than a year and a half, I don't know, 15, 16 months ago. When we were trying to think about names that would be appropriate for a baby that was born on Yom Ha'atzma'ut, we actually considered Noah for a while, settled on Tikva, but anyway. To move on. So the Ralbag says something very interesting. And in general, before we talk about this, the Ralbag actually is addressing a point that I think is really important to recognize. The Benot Tzlachat come in front of, and actually what's interesting about this pasuk is it doesn't say to whom they're approaching in this particular pasuk, just says that they, Vatekravna, that they come close. But there are 5 sisters, and they approach basically the Gedolei Hador, right? They come towards Moshe Rabbeinu, and we know that Aaron HaKohen died 2 parashiyot ago, so they come to in Chukas, which we actually read last week, right? They come to the Gedolei Hador, who are namely Moshe, Yoshua, Elazar. They approach them, and they're about to make their case, right? And you could imagine, in many ways, like the courage that it takes in order to do that, right? That it's not typical, necessarily, for only women to approach the leaders of the generation, and to ask something that maybe was a little bit, you could think chutzpahdik, possibly, maybe it was a little bit forthcoming. So the Ralbag says the following comment in his To'alot. His To'alot are actually the reasons for why certain things are created. And he says the following. Ha-To'elet ha-shishi, hu lahodia she'ein ra'oi, she'yimanah ha-adam yipnei ha-boshet, me'havi mishpato lifnei ha-gedol. He says, one of the purposes of this story, of the Benot Tzlachat, of which there are many purposes, and we'll go through a few of them. One of the purposes of this story is to teach that it is not appropriate for a person to hold back from bringing his case in front of the Gedolim just because he's ashamed or embarrassed or nervous. Aval ra'oi sheyishtadel bazeh bezrizus ubecharitzus kedei sheyagia lo ha-ra'oi. But rather, a person should do this with zrizus, with encouragement, charitzus, I would even say with like an emistic attitude so that what is appropriate for them comes. Halotira kibnot slavchad lo boshu mehavi mishpat on lifnei Moshe. Look, the bnot slavchad weren't embarrassed to bring their sentence in front of Moshe, vilifnei Elazar HaKohen, in front of Elazar, vilifnei HaNesiim, and in front of the Nesiim, namely like the heads of the Shvatim, v'kol ha'eda, in front of all of Klai Yisrael. They weren't embarrassed to come with this request. He says, until they achieved what they were asking for with regard to the Nachla. And so one thing that I think we can learn from this story is that when a person feels like, the Ralbach is making the claim that when a person feels like they are deserving of something, in the realm of halacha, in the realm of kind of asks, a person shouldn't be embarrassed to go and ask the question. A person shouldn't think, oh, this person is too great, this person is too wonderful, I don't want to go and ask the question. But rather, a person should feel confident about going to ask that question. If it's really something that's important to a person, if one really is a shayla about something, one shouldn't shy away from that shaila just because of the stature of that individual, but rather one should ask, and one should ask sincerely. The Medrash Rabbah says the following. Davar Acher is commenting on the same pasuk, Vatikravna benot slavchad v'gomer. Gedula lahen u'gedula la'avihen. It is greatness for them, and it is greatness for their father. Gedula la'machir u'gedula li'yosef. And it is greatness for Machir, who you see is one of the parents of the Benot Tzavchad, Ugdula Yosef, it's greatness for Yosef. Shekach yatsu mimenu nashim chachamot petzir kanyo. It is greatness for themselves that they're coming and doing this, but it's also greatness for their fathers, which is why the entire lineage is listed. And the Medrash calls them nashim chachamot, they're smart women, petzir kanyo, and they're righteous women. Machach masan. What was so smart about their approach when asking the Shaila? Shalafi sha'adibru. Because they spoke at the appropriate time. What do we mean by the appropriate time? Shahaya Moshe osek beparshat nachalo. Because Moshe was dealing with this topic of nachalo. Moshe was dealing with this topic of apportioning to Klal Yisrael the right locations in Eretz Yisrael. As you see in Parachav Bag, Pasuk Mim Gimel, la'ela techalek ha'aretz, to these people you should divide up the land. Amrulo, they came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Im kiben anu nirash kiben v'im lav titya b'im imenu. They come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, if we're like a son, then we should be able to get a nachala. We should be able to inherit. But if we're not like a child, v'im lav, if we're not like a son, meaning that we can inherit, titya b'im imenu. Our mother, this is such an interesting idea, our mother should have yibum done. Meaning somebody should redeem her from this idea so that her father's nachala passes down. Miyad, what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that this is a problem. Vayakrev Moshe at Mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu brings their comments in front of Hashem. Zidkaniot hayush shelo nisu ala lahagun lahem. And then there's one more comment that the Medrash says that's important to see. That they were zidkaniot. Why were they chachamot? They're chachamot through the way they asked their question. And they were zidkaniot in that Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of this entire conversation, gives them restrictions about who they can marry. They can only marry people from within their shevet so that their nachala, so that their portion of the land remains within the shevet, remains within the tribe. Happens to be, if anyone comes to the Tanakh Shiurim on Monday night, Nechama Price talked about her book. She published a book through Koren about the different shvatim. It's just an interesting read that this prompted me to think about. So Kaniot Hayush Shalon Yisu Ela Hogun Lahan, they only married people within their shevet. So they're considered to be chachamot. They're considered to be bright in that they thought about the right time to do this. I mean, they're considered to be tzikaniot because they followed Moshe Rabbeinu's halacha. They followed the way Moshe Rabbeinu had told them to accomplish this. What I want to connect this to in the Ralbag is the recognition that when we ask questions that are sincere and we ask questions that we really feel passionately about and we do it in the proper way, it comes out in a way that's very much respected and very much looked at. It was very possible that had they come to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, we want a nachla. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to look at them necessarily negatively. I don't know. I'm not going to say that about Moshe Rabbeinu. But I think if you kind of put a human perspective on this, right, coming and asking for something or asking a question is like, hey, we deserve this. Why aren't we getting this? there could be a little bit of something there that makes people feel like, hey, what are they doing? Right? Why aren't they just following along? But I think what it's showing us here is that questions that come off appropriately, that are connected, that are on topic, that are done with zrizus, etc., are all ways of asking questions in an appropriate way. And I think what's beautiful about this is the recognition that because of the sincerity of their question, because of the insightful way with which they asked, Moshe Rabbeinu went directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered their shiloh. How many people have the opportunity to have a shiloh answered directly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Right? I don't know of anyone, because that's not how it works in our generation. But even within Torah itself and in Navi, this is rare. This is a rare case. Their shiloh was answered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And I think what the Ralbag and the Medrash are teaching us is that the way that people ask and the way that it's perceived and the way that it's brought to the front definitely plays a role in the way things are translated to other people, etc. What is their reason for coming to ask the shiloh? Here we go, Pasuk Gimel. Avinu mit Bamidbar, our father died in the desert. V'lo haya b'toch ha'eda ha'noadim al Hashem ba'adat Korach. And he was not part of this group that went against Hashem in the congregation of Korach. Ki b'chet'o mi. He died of his own sin. U'banim lo hayu lo. He didn't have any sons. The question that Rashi and the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban all address is, why do they need this phrase of v'hu lo haya b'toch ha'eda ha'noadim al Hashem b'adat Korach? Why wouldn't it have been enough for them to come to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, Avinu mit Bamidbar, ubanim lo hayu lo? Right? Every single word in the Torah is important. Every single word in the Torah is critical. Why do we need v'hu lo haya b'toch ha'eda ha'noadim al Hashem b'adat Korach ki b'chatomi? Why do we need to know? What does it matter? Rashi gives a fascinating approach, and I think this gives a lot of insight into kind of our impact of our actions and the way that we think about things. Is that Rashi says, "B'chetzo mi v'lo hichti achirim imo." He died of his own sin, and he didn't impact other people's to sin. Namely, that Rashi is kind of categorizing averos to some degree. We have averos that we ourselves do that don't really impact other people. I think about this a lot. Like, I feel like the classic example always is like ripping toilet paper on Shabbos, right? Like, okay, that's a chait because you ripped and you're not allowed to rip on Shabbos, but like, did it really impact anyone else to Shemira Shabbos? No, it was done privately. But yet, there are other averos that people do that do impact other people, that do cause people to sin. And so what they were emphasizing, according to Rashi, was the idea that, no, our father, yeah, he was a sinner and he died, but he wasn't the type of sinner that went and impacted other people. So don't hold that against him. That's the approach of Rashi. We're going to skip the Ibn Ezra, and we're going to jump right to the Ramban just for the purposes of time. The Ibn Ezra says, the Ramban says the following. You're welcome to look at the Ibn Ezra. I'll send out the sources. I realize I didn't do that. Our apologies, but I can send out the sources and you can read the Ibn Ezra in your own time. You can go look it up. V'da'ati b'derech ha'pshat. My approach according to Pshat is the following. This is such an interesting Ramban. Sha'amru kacha, that they said this way, ba'avur shachashvu shemush rabinu haya sonei adat korach yoter mikol achotim shemitu b'amidbar. These women, when thinking about the way they were going to ask their shaylah, thought that Moshe Rabbeinu hated adat korach more than any other sinner that had existed in the Midbar. They thought about Moshe Rabbeinu as a person to whom they were asking the question. And they said, we believe that of all of the people that sinned in the Midbar, Moshe probably doesn't really like Korach. Because they were the ones that directly came and challenged Moshe Rabbeinu. What did they say? They thought to themselves, if Moshe Rabbeinu hates Adat Korach more than any other group of people, and then we tell him our father died, he's going to think, possibly, that our father was part of Adat Korach, and so therefore he's not going to want to give us a good answer. Al kein hodio ki lo haya mehem. Therefore, They told him they weren't from the Adas of Korach. V'ramzu od she'inu b'metayim magefos. And they also hinted, you know, he's not part of any of the magefos. Aval b'midbar meid al misaso. But rather, he died in the desert on his own bed. V'ta'am ki bechotomi. What's another reason for why they say ki bechotomi? Right, because that's another phrase that seems to be extra. If you look at the pasuk, avinu meit b'midbar u'banim lo ha'ilo wouldn't have been enough. Why do we need this phrase ki bechotomi? We just explained why we need this phrase, but why do we need this phrase? Ki bechotomi amru meit b'midbar ba'avono shelo zacha likanes ba'aretz o k'divrei Rabbi Yehuda Halevi ha'meshorer zal shepirei shehu davak im u'banim lo ha'ilo kasher yamer hayom ba'avonot yirakach. Says the Ramban something very powerful. Amru meit b'midbar ba'avono shelo zacha likanes ba'aretz. What is the reason for why they say ki bechatomi? They say he didn't get the zechus to go into Eretz Yisrael because of the sin that he did. And because of the sin that he did, and because of that sin, he was unable to enter into Eretz Yisrael. That's why we're coming now. Because he wasn't able to enter, he didn't get the zechus because of the sin that he did. And so therefore, we are saying that we still want this nachala, even if he seemingly gave it up. What I want to conclude with, and of course, there's a lot more to say about Benot Tzlafcha, the fact that their names are listed here one way in a different part. At the end of Sefer Bamidbar, they're listed a different way to show that they were all equally tzidkaniot, all five of the women. What I want to say here is something extremely powerful. And I heard this once, I'm forgetting from who, so I'm sorry that it's not B'Shem Umro. But that Yosef HaTzadik was the person that yearned for Eretz Yisrael more than many of the other people in the Torah. Yosef HaTzadik, who was head in Mitzrayim, chief king in Mitzrayim, what did he do? He insisted that his bones were to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to make sure that he was going to be able to have his place in Eretz Yisrael. And his children, so many years later, I think this is Rashi actually in the first pasuk, now that I'm thinking about it, his children so many years later came back and said, we are following in your legacy. We're following in your legacy of wanting a nachla in Eretz Yisrael. And I think part of, as we think about Shiva Sar B'Tammuz, 3 weeks in Tisha B'Av, this is definitely something that all of us should really try to take on, these midos, right? Of really wanting to get back to the place where Hashem Shechina is felt most prominently, and to get back to the place where we really feel the closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which of course is in Eretz Yisrael, and even more so than in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, that's Benuya. We're going to move into right now, into a Sefer Achinuch. A Sefer Achinuch that's commenting on this pasuk, Tzav b'nei Yisrael v'yamart aliyem b'karbani lachmi li ishe reach nichochi tishmeru lahakriv li b'mawada. Command b'nei Yisrael and say to them that they should bring my karban and it should be, they should watch over it to bring it b'mawada, to bring it at its proper time. This pasuk is the beginning of the instructions about how to bring the karban tamid. The Korban Tamid is the Korban that was brought twice a day in the Mikdash that our tfilos replace. And the Sefer HaChinuch, as he does with every mitzvah in the Torah, provides rationale as to what exactly this mitzvah is trying to accomplish. And I think it's a beautiful Sefer HaChinuch, and I think it translates very closely into our tfilos and into the way that we approach our day. Mishershei mitzvos ha-karbanos katavti b'mitzvahs ha-mikdash b'seder v'ayichuli truma. He says, the reasoning for why we have karbanot, I already wrote in a previous mitzvah, mitzvah tzadihei, masha'ala al-ruchi b'pshat ha'inyan, what came to my mind is like the emphasis of the reasoning. V'achar otam b'ta'amim, and I gave then after those explanations, ani mamshich gam kein ta'am hatzmidim lomar. I am now going to explain the purpose of it being tamid, the purpose of it being consistent. Okay, so here he's not approaching the reasoning for why we have karbanos, but he is trying to approach the concept of something being tamid, of something being consistent. Shenitztavu ba'avodu azo hatzmidi shehi pa'amayim b'yom b'zrichas ha'shemesh u'benitoso la'erev. He says, it was commanded to do this avoda twice a day, once when the sun is rising, namely in the morning, u'benitoso la'erev, and as it's setting, if you look outside your windows right now, assuming you're in Eastern Standard Time, that is basically where we're at right now with the sun beginning to set, and mincha needing to be completed within the next 45 minutes. If you do not do that, daven right after we finish the shir, or during the shir, whatever you want. Lema'an, here we go. I'm just admit this person. Lema'an nitorer mitocha ma'aseh. And why do we do this? so that we have the opportunity to wake ourselves up and to put all of our hearts and all of our thoughts directed to our towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'amarnu kama pamim, and we've said many times, she'adam nif'al v'tivo mitorer lifi esek ma'asehu, that a person acts and his nature is uplifted and is created through what he does. This is his concept that he applies in many of the mitzvot. It first comes up in his Mishershei Mitzvah for the Karban Pesach. That mitzvot provide us with the opportunity to do something that then awakes something in our subconscious mindset, in our conscious mindset, in our emotions. It translates from an action into it becoming a part of who we are, a part of our mindset. Vilachin biyod ha'adam nachun betivo shetzarich letaken lo mazon pa'amayim erev v'boker nitztaveh sheyasim megam ato ve'isko be'esek avodas barav gam ken shtei pa'amim lebal tia avodas ha'eved la'atzmo yetera al avodas l'rab. Fascinating idea. That he says that typically a person needs to eat twice a day, in the morning and at night. And so, what? A person is commanded to, the same way that a person is commanded kind of to make his own food and to do his avoda for the person that he's working for from the morning until the evening, a person has to act that way towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. That it shouldn't be that the person is, that the Eved is serving the Eved, meaning that we're eating twice a day, but that it's Yitera al Avodas L'Rab. It's more than we're doing for the Rebbe. It's more than we're doing for the Creator. Namely, if we're going to feed ourselves twice a day, we're also required, I would say, not to feed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to direct our minds, to direct our esek, to direct our malacha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. V'kol zeh lama, why do we do this? Kedei le'orer rucho v'chatzo tamid l'zeichar asbara. So that we remember to awaken ourselves, to remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu consistently. To remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Chafetz Chesed, to remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu before kindness to us. I'm going to conclude here, and I think what's important to recognize about this source in particular is three things. Number one, there's clearly a concept in general that if we're going to serve ourselves food, that we have the same obligation to do it towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think on a fast day, redirects our minds a little bit. I don't think definitely every single day should not be a fast day, both emotionally, physically, etc. But every now and then we stop and we take a step back and we remind ourselves that our true relationship is not with the physical and the world, but our true relationship is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we need to be reminded through the actions that we do that that is the case. And so the Sefer HaChinuch says the same way that we physically feed our bodies twice a day, we have to physically kind of reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu twice a day. We have to physically spiritually reorient ourselves towards our Kadosh Baruch Hu twice a day. And the extension of this, of course, is that we as people perform these services. We as people have transformed these karbanos into being in actuality our tefillos. And our tefillos are supposed to be the time where we stop twice a day, possibly three times a day, where we stop and we take a step back and we redirect ourselves. We redirect ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what I think is important, and I remember Rabbi Penner saying this in the beginning of the year, I've used it a lot over the course of the year, and I know it's helped me a lot, is that there's something about davening, even if we're not feeling it. That who we are functions as a result of what we do. So if I get up in the morning and I daven, and I don't really have kavana, and I don't really feel like this was my best davening ever, it's still amazing that we did that. It's not the best. It's not ideal. It's not l'chabchila. But what? By doing that, it transforms us into who we want to be. There's a reason that we make high school students who don't normally daven mincha. There's a reason that we make high school students, right? If we let them on their own, hopefully some of them daven, but probably a lot don't. Shachar is also, I had to presume. So the reason we have them daven twice a day in school. We don't just say like, oh, they're not doing it anyway. I'm not going to do it. No, because who we are is transformed by what we do. So I would say that is a Kabbalah for the next few weeks and really going forward as we head into the Tishrei and the Yom Nuraim, is to think about this idea that we need to check in with ourselves, but also check in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu twice a day. And that if we get into the habit of doing this, we get into the habit of picking ourselves up, opening a siddur, davening, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes, that will transform our experience into something that is so much greater and so much more elevated, will lift up our lives to get into this habit of checking with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately transform who we are in the same way that the Korban Tamim was really supposed to do that for the entire nation as well as the Kohanim. Wishing all of you a wonderful Shabbos, an easy and meaningful fast. Hopefully you all make it to the end. Wishing you all a beautiful, wonderful Shabbos. I'm going to pass it over to my husband, who's actually on a different computer, and make him the host because I am currently the host. All right, you good? Are you unmuted? You're not. You want to test your sound?
Yeah, we're good.
All right, bye. Have a good one, everyone. See you soon.
Okay, I think you're still on the screen, Pina. I don't know. Not anymore. Okay, great. I'm going to share Makoros. Now, I know that Penina taught you guys 4 Makoros, so I have 2, but 2 that are 3. So we're playing a little bit of the game of 6 today. Hope everyone's fasting okay and doing okay. You can see my Makoros. You can see the awesome. Okay, so let's start with the Nisiv Shalom. And that will work to the Rishol of Eichik. Now, the reason I say it's 2, which are really 3, is because the Tzivah Shalom brings down an important idea from the Noam Elimelech. We saw the Noam Elimelech last week. So I figured this is a good opportunity to see the 2 of them in tandem. It really refers to the end of Parashas Pinchas, because we have the entire story of Parashas Pinchas, and then we have something that we'll actually discuss a little bit more with Rishol of Eichik in just a few moments, the appointment of Yehoshua. But then we also have a lot of psukim, a lot of Torah being devoted to the parashas hakarbanos of the different holidays. So let's just jump right into the beginning of the Nisiv Shalom. I'm not going to read the entire thing inside, but I want to just see at least the first half of this paragraph inside. The Barashah Moshe Lemor, it's Avis Bnei Yisrael, where the Lamb is coming in, Achmili Yishai Rech Nichochit Yishmeru, Lakriv Liv Mo'ado. So you should know that pasuk. Well, hopefully. Maybe say the Karbanos every single day, definitely monthly. Right, we should know these pesukim. So why is it going by, right? And the Aruchayim HaKadosh Hiksha, the Aruchayim HaKadosh has a question. Maksha. Lama Nistadra, Parashas HaKarbanos Kan, Rakan, Achar Mina Yoshua. Why are the Parashas of these Karbanos, why are these all these Karbanos being listed only now after the appointment of Yoshua? The Karbanos were already knowing, they already had the minhag to do these Karbanos already for 40 years. I have a minbar, a Mishkan. Right, remember, we the Mishkan a couple of months ago, right, we were talking about the Mishkan. Right? And that's just, you know, our reading of the Torah, right, in the actual Torah. It's years ago, right, the Mishkan. So for all the years of having the Mishkan with them in the minbar, they were bringing Karbanos throughout the entire time. Umina Yehoshua, and when Moshe Rabbeinu passed the baton, so to speak, to Yehoshua, and appointed him as the next, the next leader of Am Yisrael to bring them into to the land that he was not going to be able to get into. Hayarak Mishnas Arba'im. That was only in year 40. Right? Kasva Torah Kan Es Mitzvos Hakarbanos. Why did the Torah only put in the Karbanos here in the Torah? What's the connection between, this is a secondary question, really the same question, just in different terms. Why is there a connection in the parashas between appointing Yehoshua and these Karbanos? Now, he also points out here that even if you accept the idea that Ein Mukta Mukhar Batorah, and that really, actually, these Karbanos were established well before, namely when we had the Mishkan, not now with Yehoshua, why did the Torah specifically decide to leave this parasha to this point? Meaning the question is worthwhile one way or the other. Either you say, Yesh Mukta Mukha Torah, and if there is an order specifically to the Torah, and this is listed right here, right now, and it's a worthwhile question as to why it's listed here right now, when presumably we have these Karbanos for at least for the last 40 years. And even if you accept, oh, wait a second, that's a simple, that's a silly question, really, because and therefore, really, the Torah was never written chronologically in order. I mean, in general, there might be parts that are a little out of order. Generally, it is in order, right? Adam HaRishon did come first. You don't have Moshe before Adam HaRishon, so you don't have to like get too confused with the Torah's order. But that being said, within major parshios, within the major svarim, we assume that there is some sort of semblance of order, but that maybe you say, ah, this is not an order, and therefore your question is worthless. Says the Sivan Shalom, it's not worthless, and really it's our Chaim HaKadosh's question. So maybe I could even say that we have now three figures that we're reflecting on now. We have Sivan Shalom, we have our Chaim HaKadosh's question, and we'll see an idea coming out of Nirei Malach in a minute. We're skipping over a piece from the Ramban right now for a number of reasons, but the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh's question and the Sefer Shalom is pointing out that even if you want to say that really the Torah is out of order and therefore your question is worthless, because like why are you asking about that right now? Of course we have it for the last 40 years. His point is not that the fact that the Torah put it here is still significant and therefore worthy of the question. So what's behind all this? So let's go back to the Naaman HaMelech that I told you about in the beginning. Naaman HaMelech says. And basically, I'll summarize and then we'll read a little bit inside, that every single generation, Chol Dor V'Dor, yeah, and not too long ago we said Chol Dor V'Dor, I have to say there, but this is a different thing. Chol Dor V'Dor, Yesh Mitzvah Miyuchedesh Al Klal Yisrael L'Takim Miyuchah B'Darzeh. That every generation has its mitzvah to correct. In other words, there are different mitzvahs that take place in each generation, and each generation, again, obviously we're always chayiv, in all the mitzvahs, right? Yeah, he's going to point that out right now, right? Im ki kol atayag mitzvahs amuros b'chol doros, aval yesh mitzvah yuchedes b'chol dor, shekal yisro tzrichem lechahachzik ba, b'yoser, l'umsor nafshom olah. Yes, every mitzvah is really supposed to be kept in every single generation. Don't like think, oh, well, if we can figure out what this generation's mitzvah is, I'm out of 612 and I can just focus on one. No, we have 613 mitzvahs. Great. Now that we've accepted that, amongst those mitzvahs, there is one mitzvah that's miyuchad in every door. It reminds me of the Rambam, which I'm sure you've heard hopefully by now. If you haven't heard by now, then now is a great opportunity to hear it. The Rambam talks about when it comes to Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, Omer Retzach Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Zachus Yisrael, L'Vyachir B'Lehem Torah Mitzvahs, right? We hear that phrase a lot, right? Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha teaches one of the most, repeated phrases, whenever you want to say Kaddish, right? In Shul, so they say Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, right? Whatever you were learning. So Rabbi Chanan Akasha teaches us that the Rebbeinu Shlom gave us lots of Torah and mitzvahs. Why? To give us merits, right? In order to give us merit, it gives us lots of Torah and mitzvahs. There's a whole big machlokus. What does that mean? What? How could that be? So Rashi, by the way, tells us, just an aside, Rashi tells us that means there are certain mitzvahs in the Torah that had I not been there, I still would have kept. Yeah? You know what one of them is? Not eating bugs, right? Like, I'm not down for eating spiders. I'm not down for eating, even that grasshopper that's allowed. Like, I'm just like, nah, right? So I'm not interested in the bugs. If I'm not interested in the bugs, so why does the Torah have to give me specific mitzvahs, dafka, not to eat the bugs? Oh, says Rashi, that's what it means. Lezakos is Israel. I get merit from the fact that I'm listening to the Torah and doing the mitzvahs. Oh, I'm getting merit for doing the mitzvahs. I would have done them anyway. Says Rashi, that's pshat. That's the idea. Meaning God gave us so much Torah and mitzvahs that I should be able to become meritorious from that. And that's because I would have done these mitzvahs anyway. And God gave me extra ones that to add to my side of the calculations. Something in general to be thinking about anyway. Dafka on a fast day is tshuva and our calculations of the mitzvahs that we've done and the avonis that we've done, an opportunity to kind of reframe, reorient ourselves. Especially as we head into the 3 weeks where it could very well be our door. Chol Dor V'Dor, it could be our door is the door that's going to bring Mirtzah Hashem to Beis HaMikdash. But the Rambam says on that, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, that he says, actually, it's impossible. The fact that we have so many Torah and mitzvahs is wonderful. You know why? Because it's impossible that any individual won't be able to get Olam Haba from it. What do you mean, Olam Haba from it? It's gewaldig. I mean, lots of mitzvahs. I would have thought the opposite. If you give me 5 rules, it's easier to keep than 613 rules. Yeah, maybe 10. Okay, that's the dibros. So give me 10 rules, so then I'll get all of Hava because I'll follow all those 10 really to a T. You know what I'm saying? No, says the Rambam, that's not what's going to be. If you have 613 mitzvahs, it means, yeah, you'll keep all the mitzvahs. But each and every one of us can make sure that we make one of those mitzvahs. We do one of those mitzvahs. Mamish, really glatt, kosher, awesome, right? We can invest our entire selves into that mitzvah. Not ma'afuke, not instead of the other mitzvahs. No, in addition to the other mitzvahs, but I'm going to make this mitzvah my mitzvah. I don't know if you, each and every one of us, hopefully at some point in our lives, we thought, like, what are the mitzvahs in our lives that really, really bring out the best in us? Maybe that's sometimes the wand choosing the Harry Potter rather than, right, the wand chooses the what's it called, the wizard, rather than the wizard choosing the wand. Yeah, I don't know if that's, whatever, anyway. Right, the same idea being, sometimes the mitzvah chooses us, but the experience with that mitzvah, we're like, oh, like we already know that that's the mitzvah for us. So we should each find the mitzvah, says basically the Rambam, that we give our entirety to. Because if we can fulfill one mitzvah with our entirety, not mafuki, not instead of the other mitzvahs, but in addition to other mitzvahs, doing them well, if I can do one mitzvah to his entirety, so then I can accomplish to get my place in Olam Haba through that. That's what he says. If you write the Tefillah B'Lehem Torah Mitzvah, right? That's what it means. Lezachos Yisrael, Rabbi Chanan Bar Kasha, Omer. Right. So that's also text. Why did I say all that? Because he's saying, not only does each individual have the opportunity to find their mitzvah to bring themselves into Olam Haba, what he's suggesting right now, the Olam HaMelech is suggesting that each generation has this opportunity to fix something, that something is wrong. And now, if you think about this really, like, from an intellectual point of view, you could really, for me, thinking about all the different generations, every generation has had its own challenges, its own sorrows, right? A door of the Crusades is different than the door, even than the door of the Inquisition, which is different than the door of the Chelitzky massacres, which is different than the door of the Holocaust, different than the door of Medinat Yisrael, which is not, like, it's not an equal progression there. Those are many terrible things, and Israel is a wonderful thing. And every one of the generations has had its own difficulties and had its own opportunities for growth. And so it makes so much sense to think about this, be like, oh, a door has a mission. There is a mission in each generation to accomplish something, and that I'm given the opportunity in the door that I am born into to accomplish something as an individual and as a klal, as a tzibur, as a community. And it's worthwhile to say, that's something that I always like to say, with full heart, is that I don't believe that any one of us would be here if we didn't have a mission to accomplish, right? Otherwise, why do I need myself and all the other boxes here, right? If two of us could be the same box, so then Zoom would only allow one account on, yeah? Meaning each of us has our own mission here. Yeah, you understand, I'm just, but each of us has our own mission in this world. And if we had the same mission, then one of us wouldn't be necessary. Let's put it that way. And so the fact that we are all here in this time, in this place, in this generation, it means that we have what to give dafka now, right? Dafka now. So the Melech is teaching us an important rule in life, which is that every generation has its specific mitzvah. And he goes on to say that the mitzvah of his generation was tzitzis, and the mitzvah of Noach's generation, if you look down to Noach's generation, right, so here, right, where he reinterprets with Dorosov, right? Here we go. Present the fire of Noach ish tzaddik kamei mayav Dorosov. What do you mean? Shenoach kayem v'tikin es ha-mitzvah ha-miuchez shel Dorosov. He was specifically accomplishing his Dor's mitzvah, his generation's mitzvah. And he points out that the tzaddikim in each generation can figure out what, b'siat d'shmaya, with the help of God, what is it that generation really needs its help in, what it needs to fix, which mitzvah it is. And again, and this is an opportunity for us as a generation to recognize, and that's really where it kind of comes down to the idea going to the 3 weeks after today, and it goes into rebuilding the base of the Mikdash. Every door that doesn't rebuild the base of the Mikdash is understood to have destroyed the base of the Mikdash, which means we have opportunity to really mitakin things, because number one, we ain't doing too well because we haven't brought the base of the Mikdash yet in our own door. And number two is history has shown us that there's what to work on. Either because each generation has its own challenge, its own opportunity, its own latakin, own tikkun to accomplish, but also because we don't have the base of Middash yet. And so if we don't have it yet, so then there's clearly what to work on. And he points out that those three things
tell us that the entire world is standing on this. And what he's saying is that in each of those categories, each generation will have something from each of those categories telling us that the world is literally riding on, that the existence of the world as we know it is riding on our ability to be attacking that mitzvah. And it goes on to explain which one of those mitzvahs. So Moshe Rabbeinu's mitzvah was, and then really the door of Moshe Rabbeinu's mitzvah was, they were the Mekabei HaTorah, and therefore Hayah Dor Shel Torah. Right? It's called the Dor Deah. They have the mindset, Shemei Olam, as Zohar Kadosh points out, that there was never a door like that, and it never will be a door like that. Imagine the door that they received, the Torah. This is Dor Deah. But then, right, V'ilu Ador Shel Yehoshua, Dor by Aretz. The door of Yehoshua, when we get back to our question right now, what was our question initially? Our initial question was, why is it that the karbanos of this parasha are only being brought up once Yehoshua was established as the next leader? And so I think you probably can see what he's going in, is that each door, it has also a reflection in its leader. Its leadership is also reflected in, right, in what the mitzvah, what the essence of that generation is. So when Moshe Rabbeinu's essence of the Dor Deah, the Dor Shel Mekabei HaTorah, was part of that door, so we needed a new leader to get to the next generation's tikkun. What was it the next generation was going to fix in this world? What was it? What were they going to accomplish? What was their opportunity? What was their challenge? Ilu Ador Shel Yehoshua Dor Baya Aretz. They went into the land. Kivar lohaya dor deya shal mochin, right? Umadregos kiim dor shal avoda viyagia. They weren't the cerebral door, the door of the dor shal deya, the ones that got the understanding of the Torah, a cerebral door. No, they were the door of the workers of the agia that they accomplished, right? Shal rotzon ha'elyon b'dor zehaya sheyisol ya'abdu es Hashem mitoch avoda shal yagia. One of the causes of the avod Yisrael es Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua. Kol Yimei Yehoshua. Klal Yisrael were serving God. What do you mean serving God? Oh, Avoda V'yegia. That is the purpose of that generation. The previous generation is Torah V'deya. This is Avoda V'yegia. Again, remember, Shlosh Advarim Ha'olam Omeh, Torah Avoda Gunas Chasadim. So we see here already that in the second generation, we have the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu was the Torah Shel Torah. The next generation was the Torah of Yehoshua, was the Torah of Avoda. Right? That was their job. And that was their job to accomplish in this world. And when he points out, essentially he says, and he says there's a lot of secrets, a lot of sod amongst this, and not explaining it all, but he says that's exactly what the avodah of the Beis Hamikdash was, and the karbanos, that's what it was. That is the avodah, right? We see an actualization of those avodah directly in front of us with the karbanos. And so therefore we repeat the karbanos, specifically now in Parashas Pinchas. Why? Because that's what the purpose of the dor was. The dor's entire purpose was defined by the experience of these karbanos, to go and run after something and to accomplish. After all, they were the ones that went into the Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Kanaan. They had to fight for the land. They had to conquer the land. They had to split up the land. It was their opportunity and obligation to do avoda v'yegia, and through serving their bonus. And ultimately, too, when they went into the land, they had to put, the Gemara points out, they had to go into the land. They had to make for themselves a melech, make a king for themselves. Again, that's question as to whether that was the chatchila or not, and they had to build the base of Bechira, they had to build the base of Mikdash, right? They have a nice Mishkan that's coming along with them for the last 40 years, they bring the Karbanos, but they have a new job, and yes, their door is not going to do that job. You have many generations afterwards that are going to accomplish that job. This Bechira isn't built for a while, but their job is reflective of the Avodas HaKarbanos. Yeah? Avodas HaKarbanos Shurash HaGavoh HaMe'od, it's a high level. Right? There are lots of ideas that we're not going to get into here because they haven't yet even come out. And that includes all the ideas of the Avodah Shavalev. And I want to skip a little bit further. There's a beautiful idea here. When we say Tishmer Lakriv Lib Ma'ado, what do you mean? Why does it say that? Basically, in all the karbanos, that you should watch for it to make sure to bring in the Ma'ado in its time. One second, and it goes along the lines of right. Aviv Shamaras Adavar. That idea of Shomer. Aviv Shamaras Adavar. Right. Ma'amtin Mitzav Matay Yavo. The idea of Tishmer Lakriv Lib Ma'ado, that I should bring it in its right time, is not only that I should watch and do the mitzvah like Shomer Shabbos, that I should do it correctly. No, it's like Aviv Shamaras Adavar. Well, who is that talking about? When Yosef was reportedly killed by an animal, right, mauled by an animal, and his father, Yaakov Avinu, hears about this, he doesn't give up hope. Davar, he holds on to that. And Rashi points out, he's mamtin metzapa matayavo. He holds on to the hope that, you know who's going to show up? Yosef's going to come back into my life. And after all, it's true, it happened. So you know what it means? This is amazing. When I saw this, I said, how can we not share this idea on Shavuos HaMatamos, going into the 3 weeks? And when we read in this week's parasha, Parashas Pinchas, all the time, they'll be careful to make sure to bring me these karbanos in its time. It wasn't referring to the time of year. It was talking about the right generation. The time when we would hopefully bring back those karbanos. We have to watch and keep watch for when we're going to have the opportunity to bring these karbanos back. We're going to wait to see when this is going to happen. And it's talking literally in the eternal nature of the Torah. It's Miramezes Bazen. It's referring to, not directly, obviously, it's initially Pshat is talking about, you should bring the Karbanos of Pesach on Pesach, and you bring the Karbanos of Sukkot on Sukkot, and the same for Shavuos, and the same for Yom Kippur, the same for Rosh Hashanah, the same for Rosh Chodesh, etc., etc., right? But it's Miramezes to us, Azman HaChorban. I don't know about you, this is like a wow moment for me. I've read these lines, Shmuel Akir Liv Mado, so many times. But I never read it like this. This is the type of thing that you gotta like stick in your pocket and manage like wear that pocket for the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? Sew that pocket onto other clothing so you have it with you at all times. Shekasher, but la avodas hakarbanos, but poel, shehi, hasher shavodas Hashem, ha'avodah b'chinat tishmeru, sheyeshtakot, right, as we pointed out, right, the whole idea, right? What are we gonna do? That's the goal. But even today, we still can fulfill this Tishmeru L'Akriv L'Mado that we're watching. We're waiting. Like Yaakov waited for Yosef to come back, we're waiting for the opportunity to bring these Karbanos once again. And that's what we're davening for. When we daven for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And last night, Rabbi Penner pointed out that when we daven Shema Kolenu, that the idea of tefillah, Mekom tefillah, is the Beis HaMikdash. Otherwise, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash mentioned at all in the entire Shemoneh Esrei, which is crazy. You would think that all the conversation about Geula, you would mention Beis HaBechira, Beis HaMikdash, nothing. Tefillah, that's when we say Shemaya tefillah, we're referring to rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. And it goes into the idea that this is the idea of Beinah Mitzara. When we go into the 3 weeks, this is exactly what it is. That we're mitzap on the Yeshua, we're waiting for the Yeshua. Not Yeshua. Sorry about that. Right, the Yom Elu. Right, we were talking about Yeshua a minute ago. That was his Dor's role. Right, our Dor's role is included in many of the other things that our Dor is responsible to do. One of our Dor's roles, until we get back to the Karbanos, but Elu Misayim the Binyan Beis Hamikdash. They're going to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and through doing that, we're going to be able to accomplish that. That's what it is. He said some beautiful other ideas here. I'm not going to go into them. I want to make sure that we're ending on time. Just one of the last thing that I want to read, called Osa Batoros Ola. We read this before in the Seir Shalom before. This is something that he repeats many times, this Gemara in Chazal, this Chazal in the Menachos, that if you read the Parashios of the Karbanos, by reading them, Osa Batoros Chatas, Ki Yidu Ikriv Chatas, then yes, there's an opportunity here in our lives to wait for the actual Karbanos to come back. But there's also an opportunity to step up. That opportunity comes along with learning the Parashas Karbanos, with reading the Parashas Karbanos, and investigating into them as Limud Torah is. If I'm osik, if I'm invested in, involved in reading about the Karbanos, it's as if I brought those Karbanos themselves. It's another opportunity of Shemiras HaKarbanos, that not only am I making sure I'm bringing the right time, but I'm making sure that I'm watching over those karbanos, so to speak. Those sacred karbanos that we want to bring back, I'm watching over them by learning about them, by reading about them. And that's why so many, by the way, is just an important point. If we're really mitzapa, if we're really ready, when we hear that the karbanos are going to come, we have to be ready for what we have to understand what those karbanos are. We need to know what all the halachos of the karbanos are. Right, there are actual yeshivas that only teach about that. Vodas of Beis HaMikdash, because we gotta be ready. We gotta be ready the day of. What do you mean? We're gonna start now learning the sugyas then? Crazy, can't be. Can't start learning the sugyas, the intricacies of Vodas of Beis HaMikdash. Impossible. Impossible that we're gonna be able to learn that all in one moment. No way. It's not like a download. You can't download it in 60 seconds, countdown, you're done. No, you need to learn this. You need to invest time into it. Achonah Mikdash, right? That the idea of learning about the Beis Hamikdash, learning the Kabbalas, we ourselves need to learn these things as well. We need to be prepared. We should be able to, Mitzvah Hashem, be able to bring the Kabbalas, Mitzvah Hashem, by this Tisha B'Av. So many people walk into the Beit HaMikdash, they walk into the 3 weeks, and they're like, ah, we're here again, and it's over. No, this is crunch time, my friends. This is it. This is our opportunity. Shavuos HaKabbalas today. That doesn't define what's going to be 3 weeks from now. Come on, if any generation ever knew that, it would be our generation right now. Remember the day right before coronavirus was going around in New York City? I'm saying, come on, 3 weeks later, we could never have imagined what life would have been like 3 weeks after that. We have 3 weeks. 3 weeks from right now. We never could have imagined what 3 weeks in coronavirus world looked like. We should know that just because I walked into 3 weeks of Bein HaMitzarim, of mourning a world in which I don't have a Beis HaMikdash, that it doesn't need to be. It need not end the same way it starts. Opportunity to step up and to learn. So, okay, so I know that I just quoted like four or five different, right? So we had the Rechana Kaddish's question, all built into the Nesiv Shalom. We had the idea from the Naim HaMelech. We had the Nesiv Shalom broadening from the idea of the Naim HaMelech, understanding why it is that Yehoshua Dafka was the Dar, and then understanding really what's behind all of this that we're waiting for, the opportunity to bring this back, Dafka, as we enter into the Bein HaMitzarim. Beautiful ideas. We also quoted a Rashi and a Rambam, understanding what is Rabbi Chanan and Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu, Zakus Yisrael, what does it mean the Moshe wants to give us merits by doing the mitzvahs, and we learn that as well. Let's go for, we have 5 minutes, let's do 5 minutes now of this piece from Rav Soloveitchik on the passing of the baton to Kachachaz Yehoshua ben Nun, Isha Sheruach Bo. What is going on here with Yehoshua ben Nun? The first Midrash in Pirkei Avos says, and we know this Torah, right? Moshe gave the Torah to Messina, Messiah, Yehoshua, Yehoshua is Canaan, it's Canaan, that, right? So Moshe gave the Torah to Yehoshua. And you know what? He could have given it to whom? To Pinchas. This is Pinchas' parasha, my friends. Right? Like, lest you forget, it's literally the name of the parasha. Pinchas' parasha. This is his big day. And in that parasha, we're going to start talking about Yehoshua, who gets the next baton. Okay, great. Yeah, Pinchas got himself into the Bris of Shah, right? He got into the kahuna in a serious way. Wonderful, beautiful things. But Pinchas, Elazar, they also had great, not only also, but the Medrash says they actually had greater intellectual gifts. Why didn't they get the opportunity to step up as Moshe's successors? Why was it Yehoshua? And many of us have heard Yehoshua had a special practice that actually caused him to be able to become the next leader of Am Yisrael. And it was that he would show up in advance of the Shir and after the Shir, and he would set up for the Shir and he'd clean up from the Shir. Why is that so significant? Why would that make sense? Why does it make sense that because of his devoted service, he was the appropriate candidate to replace Moshe? Why is that the case? When do you think it's the wisest one? So he goes into a couple of other examples, historical examples, right? The Baal Shem Tov didn't have to hand over the baton to Rav Yaakov Yosef, who was a Torah giant and the author of Todos Yaakov Yosef. No, he handed it over to the Magid of Message, right? The Magid of Message, who was also clearly deserving, but he was the one that served the Baal Shem Tov with great devotion, loyalty. Same thing with Chaim Volozhin, right? He succeeded his teacher, the Vilna Gaon, not only because he was brilliant, but because he also was the confidant of the Vilna Gaon. So he quotes here, I was going to bring you the original, but you could look into the Rambam directly in the Mishnah Torah. He has a prologue, he has an introduction to the Mishnah Torah. And if you look at there, he lists all the right, Moshe got the Torah from you. It sounds a little bit like the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that we initially quoted, but there's a little bit of a difference here. What does he say? Moshe did not write down the explanation of the Torah when he learned it, right? He gave a charge regarding it to the elders, to Yehoshua and the rest of Israel. Good. Elazar, Pinchas, and Yehoshua all received the Torah from Moshe. All three of them got it, right? Remember that Medrash we just quoted, that the two other ones were actually more worthy? Okay, they all got it. Now, the word but here does not appear in the actual text of the Rambam. He's adding it in. To Yehoshua, right, who was a disciple of Moshe, our teacher, he transmitted the oral Torah, oral law, and charged him regarding it. Now, this is puzzling, says the Rav. Why is the Rambam, first of all, including all of Elazar, Pinchas, and Yehoshua, when in actuality, he says, the only one he actually handed down, right, transmitted the oral law, the only one he actually handed down the Torah Shebaal Peh was to Yehoshua. What happened there? So what the Rav basically says is like this. Yehoshua was one of number of students, but he was deserving of this Masorah. Why was that? And the answer is because he was a loyal student. Sometimes that feels odd, right? Like a loyal student, that should be, oh, I got a picture of my hand in there. Give out. Like, usually I crop that out. I apologize. Right? The Medrash, forget about the Medrash for a second. The Rav Soloveitchik tells us that it's actually the loyalty of Yehoshua. Remember him going in early at night, in the morning, and late at night to go and set up the Beis Medrash and clean it up. It was his loyalty. He never left the tent. Right? Yehoshua served Moshe day and night. Says Rav Soloveitchik, and in order to pass the baton from one teacher to the next disciple, that from one leader to pass down the baton of responsibility, you can't just learn intellectually from that teacher. You need to glean a lifestyle from that teacher. And a lifestyle only comes from spending time with that Rebbe, with that teacher. Right? There's a type of partnership that comes along with it, not just an intellectual partnership. It's a partnership that comes along with spending legitimate time and effort and focus with that teacher. Moshe knew that through his student colleague, the Torah would be transmitted to future generations. And we should think about this, because I think this applies to our children as well. Just thought about this right now as we're reading this once, the second time, right? Is that this applies to our children as well. You want to pass on the Masorah to the next generation? Want to pass on the Masorah to others, our students, our teachers? Our teachers would pass it to us. Your responsibility to pass it on to the next generation. And when we do that, we need to make sure that we spend actual time. It's not just the intellectual passing down of the Masorah. No. Soloveitchik talks about that himself. Right? His father gave him a lot of the intellectual pieces of the Torah, and his mother gave him the feeling of what the Torah was supposed to be like. That was his experience. Everyone has a different experience with their parents. It's not describing your parents. It's describing, hopefully, an aspirational mode that you can have. Ritz Hashem, when you're teaching your friends, when you're teaching your students one day, Ritz Hashem, when you're teaching your children, these opportunities of passing on that baton is not just an intellectual pursuit. It's not making sure that they know the 613 mitzvahs. That's not it. It's that they should be able to live the 613 mitzvahs. They should be able to spend time with you. And maybe, perhaps, the one takeaway, one of many takeaways, but one of the major takeaways of the coronavirus experience for all of us. Again, this is not why it happened. No one's, I'm not saying, maybe other people say that. I don't know why anything happens. But I know we can respond with the what. What can we learn from this experience? One of them maybe is the 3 weeks we said before from the Nesiv Shalom. The 3 weeks does not define what the 3 weeks is. You enter 3 weeks one way, you walk out those 3 weeks a totally different way. It's a shame we could use that as a koach for these 3 weeks. The idea here is that many parents spent a lot more time with their children. You know what? Many children spent a lot of time with their parents. Maybe it didn't always go the way that ideally, in an ideal world, it would have gone. But we could learn about what happens when we spend time with other people and how we can devote ourselves to spending time with our friends, with our family, with our Ritz Hashem one day, children, the opportunity to really spend that time, that quality time, to be able to make sure that it's not just the lessons that they'll quote about you. But I think very often at a Levaya, for example, the most powerful things that always get to me, I was just actually watching a couple of the Levayas of Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik L'Bracha, they're all on YouTube. If you want to watch any of them, let me know. But sometimes it's actually the stories of how the person lived their lives, rather than necessarily even the lessons of their lives, go a lot further for me, at least. Because you learn from a person the way they live, how they incorporate the messages of the Torah into their lives. That's what Yehoshua had over Elazar and Pinchas. Even though this is Pinchas' show, this is his parasha, Yehoshua gets the next baton. Not because Pinchas was bad, no. But because Yehoshua spent more time and learned the ways of Moshe, not just the ideas of Moshe, but the ways of Moshe Rabbeinu. Mirat Hashem, each of us will be able to find a Rebbe, a teacher for us to glean from in the ways of their lives, but also one day to be that representative of the Mesorah, to pass it down to the next generation. Mirat Hashem standing in front of this Mikdash itself, that we should have rebuilt Mirat Hashem very soon, but in a way that allows them to understand this is the way we live. Torah. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Have an easy rest of your fast. I don't know where everybody is in the world, but hopefully you're doing okay. And if the fast is ending soon, you're doing great. And if it's not ending soon, you know, you're holding in there, you're doing okay. And we should learn from this. And we should learn from all the ideas that we've learned until now, how we can connect to both, again, this time period, but also the parasha, hopefully, in a significant way. If you have not yet signed up for the 3 weeks, the 3 weeks learning, we're going to be doing shiurim throughout the 3 weeks as well. We've sent it to your emails that you've registered for this with, so you can look out for that opportunity to sign up for the Zoom links as well. Hashem, we have a nice lineup. And with that, I will bid you all farewell and have a wonderful Shabbos, and hopefully we'll see you next week. I'm going to be doing the parasha one. Panini has a different shiur on Tuesday nights, I think, and I'm giving the Thursday night shiur. So have a wonderful, wonderful night, have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.